this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the news, so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, and welcome to Sachs & Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. We have Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 36, NASDAQ futures up 164. This is after we finished down yesterday, after up, down, up, down, after the Fed announcement and during the talk. As a matter of fact, it looked like we were flying to the moon, and then all of a sudden we just absolutely fell apart on the close. And now this morning we're getting most, if not all, of that back. So... very strange, wouldn't you say, Greg?
Wild ride.
Yeah, it was a wild ride. And I'm not so sure where... I'm going to say the Qs were...
good for volatility.
Yeah, well, the Qs were down here in the mid-420s, 425, and we were short the... actually long, a 30-32 spread on a just a remainder from something. We were in it for a credit for 50 cents, so right before the announcement, we said, you know what, it's 30-some cents, let's just sell it and... start something else and make a profit on it. And anytime any profit's a good profit, right? So, of course, we sell it and the market starts racing up. It gets almost to 430. And we're going, God, what a couple of idiots. And then all of a sudden, we turn around, we close it like, what, 420. So we drop like, 10 points in the Qs, like in the last 20 minutes for reasons unknown. Do we have Professor Lou?
Good morning, sir.
How are you? So were you following the market yesterday, buying and selling your spoos?
No, I was at work.
Work. What is now for you legal guys, what does work entail on a daily basis? You in court?
No, I'm in court today. I was dealing all day with witness preparation for depositions that are gonna occur in one of my cases.
Wow, that's
I spent about 7 hours preparing several people for their deposition, and then I spent another hour working on an agreement to settle another case, and then, you know, snips and bits of time dealing with an arbitration matter that's going on, and another case involving commission claims. So
sounds like a full day. One of my attorney buddies was involved in this big criminal case somewhere in Illinois. The guy was caught with a lot of cocaine. Evidently was sniffed out by the dog. And I said, well, was that all legit? And he goes, well, you know, you never really get to interview the dog. I thought you'd like that quote. You don't get to cross the dog, find out what exactly happened.
Yeah, you know, it's... So there are some interesting developments going on. I'm just going to comment on the fact that my days are quite full, and so are the days of every employment lawyer that I know, because of the just explosion in cases. And in our business, the old saying is that in bad economic times, people sue each other. In good economic times, they sue each other more. And it's astounding. The number of, you know, just legal, you know, issues that get filed, or legal disputes that get filed and are, you know, percolating through the court system at any given time. We sort of lose track of it if you're not in this business, because you don't you know, most people, I think, don't have a really close brush with the legal system unless something's really going wrong. But or if they do, it doesn't necessarily last that long. But the litigation pace for us anyway is jumping and it's continuing to jump, and I think it's going to jump even more as the job market tightens. And we're seeing that, by the way. I don't know what our official labor source says, but the job market seems to be tightening. We're seeing layoffs. We're seeing people being more selective in hiring. And I'm hoping that a tighter job market is going to mean more people standing up to this DEI crap and saying this is not going to work.
Well, what do you find? I mean, I've done expert witness testimony and seen some of this in our industry. You know, the FINRA group, it's an arbitration system, pretty much. It's reached the point where, you know, don't take this. I mean, I'm asking you if this is other places where a lot of the attorney groups will grab on like zero reason to file a suit, really, or an arbitration. They do it immediately, want to settle like on day one, because the cost now of an arbitration is probably as high or exceeds the cost of going to court. It was obviously never designed that way, but now it is. And a regular firm just looks at it and goes, I mean, you know, not a smaller firm like us, but a bigger firm just goes, all right, how much does these idiots want? $25,000. What's our cost to do this for a week? $100,000. Just pay them. And it actually has caused, I think, a real problem in the industry. I mean, to the point where it becomes not legal work, it becomes extortion. You know, we're going to charge you $100 to defend the thing. By the way, the guy only wants $30. You're probably going to win, but maybe not. But you might as well just pay him. And all it does is encourage people. Exactly.
And in our business, in the employment world, and this is true of other areas as well, if you've got insurance, it becomes a seesaw between, you know, your client who wants to defend themselves against what they consider to be scurrilous charges of discrimination or harassment or whatever. And in some cases, the individuals are involved because they get sued individually. But it becomes a fight between those folks and the insurer, because the insurer does not look at this from the perspective of reputation.
Yeah.
Damage to goodwill. It's there, and the insurance people are aware of it, but it doesn't really get factored into the damage calculations. They're just looking at getting rid of this thing for the cheapest amount possible. And so, you know, the other side, the plaintiff's side of the bar, knows this, and they know that, they know that there's insurance on the other side, and that there's a payoff there somewhere, and they put a credible case together on paper before anybody testifies with the allegations, then they can go forward. You factor in all kinds of things like that. I mean, for example, a trial here in Denver is different than a trial in Washington, D.C., is different than a trial in almost any major metropolitan area in California, is different than a trial in Texas. And all of these things, you know, all these things factor into it. And I mean, I'm not telling you anything. You've been living in one of the most plaintiff-friendly areas in the country, in between Chicago and, what was it, East St. Louis, that county down there in Southern Illinois that would hand out a plaintiff's verdict at the drop of a hat.
Yeah. Well, the lawyers know that. And the cost to litigate, it's almost like the cost of getting cancer treatment on your own. The cost to litigate is when the average, you know, person makes, the mean person makes $39,000 a year, and the high-end lawyer charges you $39,000 a week. It's kind of a problem.
Yeah. And so these kinds of economic factors drive the train, and then you know, I think we're going to start seeing a wave of sort of what I'm going to call backlash employment litigation, as people get laid off, to the extent that companies have, and I've talked about this before here, but to the extent that companies have subscribed to the DEI sort of culture and have actually moved to install that culture into their firms, which involves things that we've been telling clients for 30 years, don't do this, you know, don't talk about race in your training programs in the sense of, you know, we have favorite whatever, don't get into race in hiring or gender identity questions in hiring decisions or promotion decisions. And of course DEI pushes exactly the opposite. To the extent that that's been a factor in these business cultures, you're going to have you're going to have people suing when they don't get the job, they don't get the promotion, they get fired. It's going to be a real issue.
Well, I'm sure you have a couple of topics. I want to talk about obviously all the demonstrations. I also want to talk about this chemical weapons accusation against Russia. But
yeah, the choking engine.
But I have a question about what's happened here in Chicago, and it's kind of local, but the listeners bear with me because I think it probably could impact any state, really. There's an outfit here I just happen to know because one of my buddies that I meet after work once in a while after we work out, and he takes the train, so I drive him home, and once in a while if he doesn't have anything to eat, I drop him off with this Foxtrot, which evidently had, I don't know, there's a bunch of locations, and they must have done some prepared foods, and I don't know if they had hot foods, I never was in the place. But they merged with somebody, and they had, you know, like I said, I'm going to say 10, 15 locations here in Chicago. I dropped them off there like last Monday night. A Tuesday morning, the place closes while the employees are there. They just say, okay, close it up, go home. And so Illinois has this, was it the Warren Act? The Warren Act, you're supposed to
get
people.
Yeah, it's called a mini Warren statute, yeah.
So, okay, but you have that, and everybody's like kind of suing the place to, to get 60 days pay or 30 days pay or whatever, which obviously you'd like to see people deserve, but do people in office or the lawyers that hang with them, we'll take that personally, do they have any idea that when somebody does that, it's because they're out of dough? They probably tried everything they possibly could to make it, and all of a sudden they don't have a dime left and the checks are bouncing. Where exactly do the people expect them to get the money? People who work for the government just think there's this incredible cash of cash from someplace elsewhere. If you're broke, you're broke. Well, I mean, what are we missing
so
here?
So this operates a couple of different ways, and this will sound fiendish to you, but this is what our regulatory state does. I haven't looked at Illinois' mini Warren statute in a while, but the Federal Warren Act, on which Illinois is based, has an out for a company that suddenly goes out of business due to some kind of unexpected. And I see you sent me the article that. For some kind of unexpected business circumstance that causes an immediate shutdown, like a fire or an explosion or some economic disaster. But if you don't have that, then you're supposed to be thinking 60 days in advance about laying off all these folks and shutting down business operation so that they have a chance to go out and get other jobs and make plans for whatever economic loss they're about to suffer. When these guys go out of business, without giving that 60 days notice, you are liable for up to 60 days of wages, and I believe attorney's fees, but up to 60 days wages, if you don't
from where?
Well, and so this is the issue. In some states, these Warren Acts have individual liability, so that you can sue in the individual business owners for the amount that's there. On wage and hour cases, like overtime and commissions and things like that, if there's a liability, Illinois and Denver have what are called wage theft provisions in their statutes, where they say if you don't pay people what they're owed for working for you, you're stealing from them, and that's criminal.
Well, sure you are, but I mean, this is what I don't. None of these people, and I'll look at the people who put these acts together. It sounds great, Lou. And by the way, I'm all with it. I'm with you on all this, but the people I know in mid businesses that went under or heard about or read about, you know, if they close at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's because at 11:59 the night before they were scrambling to every banker, every source of capital, every place they could, trying to keep the place afloat until the last second, probably actually thought they could pull it off.
Yeah, I agree, and there's a pretty good argument to, but so you have what I call sort of a disconnect in terms of the perceptions that that people have of the business community. The people who designed the Warren Act looked at business at the time it was enacted, looked at businesses as these conniving people who were working to screw the big bosses, looking to screw the working class, and treating the working class as, you know, proles who were disposable, to whom they owed nothing, and who weren't going to get the value of their labor. So, by the way,
a lot of firms did that.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah, that's what it was designed. That was the worldview of the people who wrote that statute. It's not the worldview of a lot of people, and it's not the way a lot of my businesses operated. But there's an argument to be made that, you know, when you put something like the Warren Act in place and you force companies to divert attention from trying to keep the business up and running to doing this, you're creating a real problem. And it actually works against the interest of the business staying open, because the minute you issue a Warren notice, you basically tell the workforce, look, we're struggling.
Yeah.
And it's not surprising if you suddenly lose 25 to 50% of your workforce within the first 15 to 20 days, which makes it impossible for you to continue operations.
Well,
so the statute actually reinforces, you know, a closing mentality.
Well, if you listen to Dan Janitas will be on after us today, and you listen to Kevin, where they're working this stuff out in Indiana and a lot of places, they deal with these more middle companies where maybe the person who founded the place might still be there. The attitude is quite a bit different than I've seen in Chicago. Places buy a place, the first thing they do is shut it down. I mean, there's no affinity there for anybody. I mean, one of the people who there was, you know, when you go buy a hot water heater, you're probably still buying a Rheem, right? Is that still a big name? Well, they used to have a big factory on 77th and Kedzie. It was many acres. I mean, a lot of kids worked there in the summer and stuff, and it was hard work on the line, boy. My cousin, who was a football player, his job was to pick the thing up at the end of the line and put it in a box all day long. Those things are heavy. Anyway, he decided he might go to school after that summer. So
I'm looking at this case. I mean, this is a federal Warren Act case. It filed in federal court. I can't tell if they've added the Illinois version of that statute on there. But the short answer is, you know, they're going to have to show that they had some kind of unexpected reason for shutting down, or some legitimate business reason for escaping Warren Act liability.
I'm guessing they thought they were going to make it. They were going to get money from somebody.
Well, that's not good enough. It's got to be something else.
I don't disagree. I'm saying, but in this place, in the Rheem case, they told everybody they were going to move to Mexico or someplace, or some damn place. They told everybody, you can move. And most of the people there are in their 50s. They don't move. When they don't move, they cut their pension somehow, Lou. They said, we asked you to move, you quit. We didn't fire you. How'd they pull that off?
I don't think that's gonna.
Well, it did. I'm talking 25 years ago. I mean, people did stuff like that. That's why these acts are there.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I it's out there. I know there. And again, when this statute was enacted, we were going through a shakeout in a lot of industries as we moved a lot of stuff to China, and we don't have to move. We moved a lot of stuff to Mexico. And so there was a huge shakeout in these industries, and this was happening in the 80s as well. And you know, a lot of businesses played fast and loose. So we'll see. I mean, they may be able to escape it with a bankruptcy declaration. They may be able to escape it by dissolving the company. We'll just have to see.
What Mike asked me, he tweeted me early, or texted me early, get your kind of view on some of the demonstrations. They had one in a high school here in Chicago yesterday, which I actually knew about because I know somebody who's on the board of the high school, and they were going to, you know, was going to be planned for the next day, and the school gave the kids a half hour to do a sit-in and blah, blah, blah. And it was, you know, I think it was controlled. Everybody sort of behaved, I think. I was kind of surprised that evidently the Chicago public school system was like no help with any advice for the principal. But I think the principal handled it pretty well. But it was all, of course, all over the news.
Was this yesterday?
Yeah. And
okay.
Now DePaul is doing their stuff, and of course they interviewed.
And of course, Northwestern caved.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, I don't know what, I mean, I didn't get to read the agreement, but I'm sure.
Oh, it's outrageous.
Well, somebody interviewed some girl from DePaul, and she didn't want her tuition money going to Israel. I mean, don't you think you ought to at least read up on some of this stuff before you go on TV and open your mouth? But I guess not. I don't think her tuition money is necessarily going to Israel. But anyway, it's kind of happening all over, Lou, and it's, you know, it's.
I am, all right, so my position, for whatever it's worth. The people that are doing these protests are not a protest necessarily about Israel. These are the same people, and the same people funding it, by the way, and it's being funded from very wealthy sources through either Soros' organizations or other NGOs or other groups that are very well funded.
Well, what are they doing? Are they buying the tents? I mean, they're not paying the kids.
They're buying tents, they're buying supplies, they're buying food, they're sending the organizers into these campuses. These people are, in many cases, this is not an anti-Israel protest. That's just the focal point. It was BLM, you know, 4 years ago. These folks are,
I thought,
anti-Western.
Why did I think that Soros was Jewish? I mean, I don't know that. I don't know
if he is. He may be, but he's definitely. But that's what I'm saying. This Israel is just the focal point on this one. This is an anti-Western, anti-American, funded, you know. These funded demonstrations, and you saw this develop very quickly with the burning of American flags and death to America and all the other stuff that was being shouted at these rallies and the signs going up. That's number one. Number two, to the extent that Israel, it is against Israel, it's stupid, because you know the idea that Israel is committing genocide is ridiculous. We've talked about what a genocidal campaign would look like, and it's not happening. So they're not well informed. Number three, they are allowed to sit and they can protest all day long. If they disrupt the classes, if they engage in anti-Semitic behavior, which a number of these demonstrations have. I mean, at UCLA is the latest, where they were checking people's Jewish status before they would allow them to enter certain areas of the campus that the rioters were controlling.
Jewish status. What exactly does that mean?
It means, are you Jewish?
Ah.
Or do you support Israel? Or do you think Israel has a right to exist? If you do, then you can't come in. And they were physically blocking people. And of course, at UCLA, it got into fights. The riot.
I saw that.
So if you start that, then you can look at it. I look at it from the perspective of, you know, Thoreau, civil disobedience. Okay, you're engaging in civil disobedience. You should expect to be arrested. And I don't know why the universities weren't playing this, but you should expect to be arrested and expelled. And let the universities take control of it and deal with it the way they should. The failure to do that, the mealy-mouthed declarations coming out of places like Northwestern, and Northwestern ought to be ashamed of itself. This is inexcusable. Another thing that should be recognized, I think, is that the people that are screaming pro-Hamas stuff, and it devolved very quickly to anti-Western, anti-American, pro-Hamas, they're supporting terrorism. And the last time I checked, you know, it's a federal crime to provide material support to a terrorist organization and encouragement. And that's what a substantial number of these
people
are doing.
My question is,
as to end this all up, where's the FBI? Are they investigating these people? This is a disruption, an anti-American disruption.
I don't think these people do anything they're supposed to do, Lou.
Pardon me?
I don't think these people do anything they're supposed to do.
Well, that's fair. I'm just raising the question. That's my take on this. I'm glad to see the police are being used to break up the craziness. I hope the schools will expel, or at a very minimum suspend for an extended time, the students who are involved. And they should be gone. And to the extent that they are here on student visas, they should be deported.
I find this particular one, and I know you and I have discussed, this off show, and I know where the military, and I notice Hamas is a really bad group. I also know the leaders are nowhere near, I think the leaders are nowhere near Gaza, probably.
I think Sinwar is probably in Gaza.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm saying
I think he's in Rafah.
Okay, but my point is that there's a lot of stuff that is militarily proper. I certainly don't want a terrorist organization running around, but I also know that there's other stuff that is, if it's in front of people's stage. I am a huge supporter of Israel, not a supporter at all of Hamas. Hope nobody would ever accuse me of that. Yet I think for a bazillion tanks to go pound into Rafah right now is a really bad idea. I mean,
I don't think they're going to do that.
Okay, but I'm saying if
they haven't done that yet.
Okay, my point. But then you drop back to, we've been really careful, and somebody else is going to say, well, how careful were you? And, well, we should have killed 8 babies. We only killed 2. That after a while, I mean, I'm not, as you know, nobody agrees with you more about how today's world is a little different. yet there's people that if you'd have walked in on the end of in 1943 and somehow missed the chapters on Pearl Harbor, China, and Bataan Death March, and people would have thought we were picking on the Japanese, right? I mean, it depends on where you come into the program. I'd almost like to do a Ted Hesburgh on all these kids and say, you know what? If you're going to do this, I'll let you do it. But by the way, right now you're suspended. And at the end of the week, if I don't get a really serious paper that's not AI or anything that shows me you've at least researched the history of this whole thing and have come to your opinion with these strong things on your side, you're out of here. That's what Hesburgh did during Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, something along those lines. I mean, the idea
that... That kind of leadership is long gone.
Oh, it is, without a doubt. But I mean, there's this mealy-mouth... If you're going to be a leader, you got to lead, Lou. I mean, that's the job, right? I mean,
right. Well, that's a great point. So somebody raised the issue, one of my podcasts that I was listening to when I work out, and it was, they were saying, what do these people want to be university presidents for? What do they think it involved? Did they think it was just cocktail parties and fundraisers?
Oh yeah.
They weren't gonna have to make some tough decisions or be faced with this. You signed up for this. Make a decision. Handle the problem. Preserve your school. They're not interested in doing that. And I mean, it took Columbia what, 2 weeks to finally figure out that they had to move the cops in. It got a little more direct at UCLA because
yeah.
They're rioting.
They were fighting. Each side was fighting, so you had to stop that quick.
Right, right. It's totally crazy that these people.
Real quick quote, and I don't know how people should quote stuff from their mother, for God's sake, but maybe I was fortunate enough to have one that used to say something once in a while was quotable. It says to me, you know what I can't stand? They hire these people for these jobs for so much more money than anybody else with the idea that they've got this wisdom. She's meaning like presidents of companies and stuff. Not founders, but people you hire. And she says, you don't need them day to day. The place runs by itself.
That's right.
The reason why you have them there is whenever there's a crisis, they're supposed to know something more than somebody else and make a decision that nobody else can make. And you find out that when you first time you have a crisis, they don't know anything.
Or more importantly, and this is why it's so frustrating, the presidential campaign is so frustrating, that we elect people at the top of the food chain, whatever the food chain is, for their leadership, because we want them there when something bad happens. Hillary Clinton made that commercial about the 3 a.m. phone call that I think she was in her campaign back in 2016 in the primaries. And I mean, as much as I dislike Mrs. Clinton, that was a pretty effective ad, and I thought it got to the heart of the issue immediately. And that's why character is important.
Well, that's generation and mine. Now you get somebody because they're popular.
I'm just saying the whole point of putting people into these jobs is that you feel that their character is going to lead them in the right direction and making the right moral.
That's not what we're doing with these two guys.
No, that's why I indicated I'm so terribly frustrated.
We got to dash the break here, but the last poll, which I showed, you know, the three key states really close and so forth. The guy who did the polling said something effective. We've never done a poll like this where mostly everybody is voting against the other guy. The other guy's worse because people aren't voting for. Trump followers that are voting for Trump. I get that part, but
because they want the China broken. But anyway, go to break.
S&P futures up 32, NASDAQ futures up 150. We're coming back from the big turndown after the speech yesterday, which was really crazy. Boy, yesterday we're up down, and all of a sudden we're back right up to where we were before the speech. So very interesting. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 147. Dow futures up 168. Over in Europe, we have, as soon as I get my mouse working here, we'll figure out what's going on over in Europe. Maybe you should until this thing works, why don't you do traffic weather sports, Greg, and then I'll get back.
Morning, everyone. 6:38 here in Chicago. It is 54 degrees and cloudy. Thunderstorm or two this afternoon. A high of 77. Phoenix, 69 degrees right now. Warm with plenty of sun today. High of 92. Traffic, we got inbound Kennedy from Montrose. That's 17 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 47 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 39 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th is going to be 19 minutes. And the Stevenson from 294 of the Rhine is currently 39 minutes. Sports, we got MLB. White Sox lose at home against the Twins. That was 10-5. Diamondbacks lose at home against the Dodgers. That was 8-0. And Cubs, good news, win at the Mets. That was 1-0. And then NHL, we had the playoffs last night. That was Stars win. That was 3-2. Oilers win at home, 4-3. That's all I got, Chief.
Boy, I love it when the Mets lose. Just one of those things. We have over in Europe, the DAX up 20. It's 0.1%. FTSE up 32.4. Kekron down 49.6. A little bit of a mixed bag there. In Asia, a couple of these guys were closed yesterday. Nikkei is up in today, down 37.1%. Hang Seng, I think it was closed yesterday, is up 448, over 2%. And Shanghai is still not open. Their last trade was 430, so we're not getting any news out of there. Again, yesterday. And these prices are cash. Now the futures are actually down a lot lower after 3 o'clock. DAX up 80, or DAX, the Dow Jones up 87, S&P's down 17, NASDAQ down 52, but the actual NASDAQ futures were down 100 and something. So they're bouncing back a lot of what we lost after the close. Very strange. Tenure up 1 basis point, 4.60. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.53. Over in Japan, almost exactly 0.90. Oil up 47 cents, but under 80, 79.47. Brent up 59 cents, 84.03. Natural gas up 3 cents, 196. Arbob up a penny, 2.59. We've got gold. Should be getting clobbered this week. Still over 2,300, but down another 220, 23.08. Silver down 21 cents. These guys, I think, made it to 28. And they're 26.53, these guys, silver. Copper down 6 cents, 4.48. We have U.S. dollar, 107 in the euro. So up a little bit from a few weeks ago, but not horrible. I mean, not a lot. British pound, 125. Now, that, the British pound is definitely lower than a few weeks ago. It was 127. We have Bitcoin, it has been getting hammered. Actually, it's coming back all today, up 820, 58,310. Lou, it seems like a lot of stuff with the demonstrations and with
we have two winning teams. The Avalanche and the Nuggets have moved on to their second round of their playoffs.
I can't get over how good that center is. And the guy
Jokic?
Yeah, the guy's like me, can't jump. But he does everything else a lot better than me.
So one brief point. There was an interview about their interviews about him last year, talking with a bunch of African American centers, you know, good, really good players' names that we've recognized. And one of the guys said, "Yeah, you know, you look at him, the guy can't jump over a dollar bill, but he's deceptive. He's got that Serbian strength."
Oh, the man's strong as an iron. You know, one of my buddies, kind of a character. He listens to the show, I think. I hope he's listening. He went to my buddy went to Marquette, but he was very intrigued by the reputation Larry Bird was getting in Indiana State. And somewhere, someplace, he goes, "I'm going." I couldn't go. He asked me to go with him. He goes, "I'm going to go down and see this guy." We drove down somewhere and saw him play, and he came back, and his report was, he does everything you need to know in a basketball exceptionally well. He has amazing court awareness. He has hands that are spectacular. And, oh, by the way, he can pass with either hand and all the other stuff that really makes a basketball player. And this guy, Jokic, has all that to a T. Oh, he's huge. And he's strong as can be.
Yeah. Well, Charles Barkley, I think, said it best. And he said, again, this is from a comment last year. He said, I love watching the Nuggets play because what they're doing is playing basketball. He goes, It's not a bunch of guys. It's not a bunch of guys trying to make SportsCenter highlight reels. It's people playing, you know, playing as a team. And it all goes through Jokic. I mean, he is totally unselfish. He almost always, I mean, he's always looking for somebody else to be a better play. But he's got a very, very high basketball IQ. And he sees the court, sees the possibilities, sees the openings. And when you've got somebody like that who is, again, whatever he is, you know, 280, 290, who can move
easy,
who can move as quickly as he does, you know, you're gonna have openings, and he knows how to exploit them.
Plus, if anybody who's never played basketball, because I couldn't jump, but if your fundamentals are, if you're playing in the middle, the guy playing against you, he could be Mr. Jumping Bean, for God's sake. But if you lean into him, he can't jump, right? If your body's pressing on his, how do you jump? Well, you don't. This guy, he comes in, and all of a sudden he's got that big body. Guy's trying to guard him. He kind of turns into him a little bit, but not enough to foul. That big hand goes up, and the guy doesn't move, because how can he? You got to jump through 300 pounds.
Yep. No, he's a phenom, as we used to say.
As the Lithuanian guys, they love basketball, right? And I used to play with a group of those guys every Tuesday night at Revis High School, and their comment about him would be, he takes up space.
Yeah. Let me briefly talk about this thing with the Russians.
Yeah, what's this all about?
So this is really interesting. You know, the last major use of chemical weapons in war was World War One, and out of World War One comes the Chemical Weapons Treaty, which says you cannot use, you know, choking agents, blister agents.
Well, did you ever read any of the history of that, or actually see it on the? I somehow or another one day I kicked on the TV, and I saw the whole, not the whole, but a real history of that on the History Channel. It was fascinating.
Tom, my next door neighbor, two doors down in Winnipeg, where we when we lived in Canada, had been gassed in World War One. So my parents talked about what he had been through. He had been hit with chlorine gas, and what it did to him, and you know, the number of people that it killed and disabled. What the Russians are accused of doing is using riot control agents that are laced with actually something that was used in World War One, a chloropicrin, which is an agricultural chemical that causes severe lung irritation, and they're not using like nerve gas or anything like that, or nerve agents, which by the way they had, I assume they still have access to a huge stock of during the Cold War. But what this is designed to do is to force you to fight with a gas mask on, or to fight with in a chemical suit, which greatly complicates movement, communication, everything. And they're using it against fixed emplacements. And it doesn't surprise me that the Russians are doing this. They have their concept of fighting, you know, has no really regard for international law or the rules or anything else. So I'm reasonably certain that they're using it. It's a violation of international law. It's a violation of the rules of war. It invites the Ukrainians to do something comparable, and this is one of the reasons why you ban these things, because you're going to end up with escalation.
Well, is there ever like a? By the way, I had somewhat of a same experience. I never met the man, but my uncle somehow met and married this lady. She's from Britain, living here in Chicago. God, Lou, she was terrific. My favorite aunt, well, one of them. And her dad had fought in World War One, and somehow, I don't know, to this day, I can't figure out how the hell this happened, but he was gassed, and he ended up losing one lung. Can you imagine him pulling a lung out of you in 1918? I always wondered, why was the other one okay? But the guy made it to, like, 75 or 80, you know, with the one lung. Whoever did the job did an okay job, but didn't, when they first started this, wasn't there, you couldn't use gas in artillery shells, when I remember the show.
Yeah.
So then what they did is they had people sneak on their elbows and knees and brought hoses near the other guy's trench. It was okay through a hose.
Well,
allegedly.
It
wasn't against the quote rules, because they didn't think of it yet.
There was no treaty prohibiting the use of these weapons at the time. So these guys started using it. Eventually it stopped because it was just, they couldn't practically deliver it, the kind of stuff that they had. Now, nerve agent, you know, which is where we developed during the Second World War, that stuff is much less spreadable. The nerve agent droplets, a cloud of that stuff, could be absorbed through the skin. Even your protective gear won't work real well for it. And it doesn't disperse the way chlorine gas or mustard gas or.
Well, doesn't chlorine gas, and the thing that really got everybody the first day is everybody dove into the trench, and it turns out
chlorine's heavier than air.
It's heavier than air, so that was the worst thing you could do. And also, the first day somebody tried it, I think it was the Germans, but I'm not positive, the wind turned and actually blew it back at their own guys.
Yep. So, and that's another reason why they were, you know, ultimately they stopped using it, because the agents that they had at the time were uncontrollable, and it was creating almost as much trouble for the attacking force as it was for the defending force. And it's horrible stuff, and so it doesn't surprise me. I mean, the Russians are not using those kinds of agents; they're using irritation agents. But the problem is, once you cross that firebreak of using this stuff, it escalates, and it can escalate very quickly. So let's say the Ukrainians, who are fighting for their national survival, decide, okay, if they're gonna throw this stuff at us, it's a chemical weapon's a chemical weapon. We have some old stuff lying around that we can weaponize. We're gonna throw it at them. And then the Russians come in and say, well, if they're throwing that at us, then no holds barred. Traditionally, chemical weapons are classified as weapons of mass destruction, although they are not obviously in the same category as nuclear weapons. But they are categorized as weapons of mass destruction because of the widespread area that they can affect, and the terrible effect they have on the landscape. If you release large amounts of chlorine gas or nerve agent, nerve agent is persistent. If you drop a nerve bomb, a nerve agent bomb on some area, and that cloud forms and those droplets scatter, those droplets remain active for days, in some cases months, and anything that touches them, any mammal or animal or anything that touches them is going to die. And so they can render huge areas of your battlefield uninhabitable for extended periods of time, and they extract a terrible price. And so they're categorized as weapons of mass destruction. And the general rule during the Cold War was, if you cross the fire break with a WMD, with either gas or nukes or radiological weapons, then all bets are off. We can use whatever we have in our WMD arsenal in response. And so that made people very careful. It is one of the reasons why Saddam Hussein's use of gas in the Iran-Iraq war was so horrible, and why we were so concerned about it in the early aughts. And this is the mentality that, we worry about with these kinds of treaties. And of course, the Russians don't have any problems with throwing that stuff in there.
Lou, we passed these bills a couple weeks ago that I think, again, I'm not a Washington cretin, but it seems to me that when you pass bills like this, when people, I mean, you go back to, World War II, I mean, if you knew a year or two, we had a really good feeling that, you're gonna lay down three aircraft carriers, probably you already had the designs and stuff started. I don't know where you got the money for the paychecks, but and you didn't just wait until the bill was passed to start. Now this Ukrainian aid and some Israel aid and Taiwan, the Ukrainian probably was the most needed and current, I would say. Now, are we talking about ships are waiting off the port for the president to sign this thing? Are we talking about, okay, it's signed, let's go start making bullets? I got to believe it's more the former than the latter. I mean, and I guess my question is, are they already getting stuff that they can use, even though it's only like a week?
Well, we've been ramping up production for the last 2 years. So that's to the extent that there's been forethought and foresight on this, then that's, you're right there. I don't know if the supplies were ready to go and just needed the money thrown at them to develop. I doubt it. I think our defense industrial production is going, with respect to things like artillery shells and bullets and anti-tank missiles and things like that, is going as hard as it can right now. So I'm guessing that this money was thrown at these companies and said keep going, but we'll get this aid to them. Some of the money is going to go to aircraft. Some of it's going to go to for Ukraine, I'm talking about now.
By the way, this is not an interruption. I know you saw this article. Didn't Kazakhstan or someplace was getting some new Russian fighter jets or something, and they offered their old ones, like the MiG-29s and stuff like that,
yeah,
for like cents on the dollar. Didn't we or somebody buy like 40 of them at the auction?
I think that's correct. I read something about that, about it, a bunch of old Warsaw Pact stuff coming available as people upgrade.
Does the stuff even run? But they're saying Now, if you give it to someplace like Ukraine, even if you use it just for reconnaissance and stuff, it's still, if it flies, it's still perfect for stuff like that. I mean, you're not going to go in a dogfight with a new guy, but I mean, if you can get in the air with it, it's better than nothing.
Yeah. So if the stuff's usable, I mean, the way the Russians do their business deals, and I know this because I was working on some of them. You know, they sell the airplanes, this equipment, to a client, and then their maintenance contracts are back in Russia, so they won't repair the stuff in like Indonesia, which bought Su-35s, I think, Sukhoi fighter bombers. So they won't repair them in Indonesia. They say, yeah, fine, they're ready for depot maintenance. They have to come back to Russia. And the Indonesians go, oh, that's going to be expensive as all get out. And the Russians go, yeah, that's right. So we'll sell you some new aircraft. And so you end up with a fleet of aircraft that have, and you know, the stuff is frontline stuff, but it doesn't have the kind of longevity because they don't do the repair work on it that we, you know, our systems do. So you end up with some, you know, a lot of combat ineffective airframes that with some tinkering and work would be flyable. And in fact, this was one of the markets that I was working in when I was running my 3D printing company over in Italy.
Okay.
We were looking to work on production, design and production of parts for this kind of situation.
I have a question for you, because I mean, it always seems, Luke, you're such a straight and focused mind. You notice it more than me that we jump around on topics all the time. We jump around on topics all the time, which we do. You know, the weird part to me, they're all sort of connected. When I asked you the question about, you know, are we really producing this stuff sort of anyway? The reason why I ask that is because I have this big curiosity, and I'm surely not alone on the people on the show. The idea that we have this budget deficit, and every once in a while I pull out the Treasury statement that's, you know, the detail to down to the penny, no matter where you want to look. And yet, if you look at the deficit in the budget, one might think, one, that if you look at the amount of debt that's growing and you look at the deficit by month, they should sort of match up. Well, they don't. The debt is growing quite a bit faster than the budget statement would lead you to believe, which, of course, immediately says somebody's spending money off budget from someplace. And then the next question in my devious mind is, okay, who the hell is the guy somewhere that the Congress, and most spending has to come through Congress, who's the guy somewhere that is sort of okay with this and says, okay, this expense, we're gonna pay Lou. Okay, that goes on the budget statement. Now we're gonna pay Lou's partner. Nah, that doesn't go. Where's the other bank account, and who makes those decisions? I guess my next question would be, would the arms build up that maybe even both sides of the aisle agree in secret, you know, secret meetings downstairs in the place like Mike used to go to? Do they say we need to, even though we're not gonna tell anybody, we better start getting some of these artillery shells going because we're out of them, and oh, bad, we're going to pay for them out of this other place. I mean, is the military the whole, or do you think the whole is some other? I mean, the whole meaning the money that's being spent that appears to not be going through the normal process, is that whole the military or the CIA or where?
I think there are a number of them. DARPA is one, which has a number of so-called black projects.
DARPA is who, for those that don't know?
Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency.
It's okay.
It's the R&D branch of the DOD, and they fund all kinds of sort of black projects involving weapons, aircraft, guns that shoot around corners, things like that.
I'd like to see one of those.
Tell Greg to look up guided bullets on the internet. You'll see some test video.
I didn't see any of those in my concealed carry class, and maybe they should give that to the Chicago gangs.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is the technology is pretty interesting, and I can't remember the caliber. I think it's a 338 or maybe a 50, but you know, literally one shot, one kill. You let the bullet comes out, and as it flies through the air, it's guided to the target, which is moving, and it'll off bore sight, you know, 45 degrees. It's like a guided missile. Anyway, that's one area. It's very difficult for the DoD people to, and I don't think they focus their efforts on this that much anyway, to hide money for bullets or bombs. It's much easier to hide it for R&D and sort of limited production type stuff.
All right.
So I'm guessing there isn't much of a black hole for that kind of thing.
Well, we got to dash a little good stuff. SP futures up 31. NASDAQ futures up 136. So if you bought your spoos last night, you're rolling in dough. Hey, good luck in court today, buddy.
Thank you, sir. See ya.
And we'll be right back with Mr. Dan Janitas.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some may be embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, North Bank Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Greg Pappas on the board. SP futures up 32. NASDAQ futures up 140. Making back virtually all, if not all, of the late sell-off yesterday after we were running up after the Fed guy got talking. Do we have the Professor Dan Janitas with us?
I am here.
I'm going to make it a for those who watched the movie Airplane, if you can remember the scene with... Mrs. Cleaver, Barbara Billingsley,
yeah.
the three black guys are in the front and they're trying to order dinner using jive, using the
yes,
and she says, "Oh, I speak jive," and she was translating what the guys wanted for dinner. A pretty funny scene, and probably couldn't do it today. But so I'm going to put you in the role of Mrs. Cleaver, and I'm going to say, I want you to translate Fed speak yesterday because I found it the longest dribble of BS I ever heard. But maybe you can do better.
I will absolutely agree with you, and it's becoming a broken record. We're not getting a whole lot of information because I listened to the Powell speech, and I listened to the, you know, once the decision, which was of course not even there was no chance that there was going to be any move yesterday. But it just seems like they're covering all bases. You know, it would be like a weatherman who doesn't know, especially a weatherman in Florida, who doesn't know who's going to get the rain today because it might be one area. So they cover themselves and say, you know, 50% chance of rain or something. And that's sort of the impression I'm getting with them. They're not really stepping up to the plate with any definitive information. They're just kind of dancing around this. One of the things that they said that we already know is that it's very likely that we're not going to see a hike in rates. Well, we've known that for a while, and it's also very likely that we're not going to see rate cuts anytime soon. Again, we already know that. That's they've been very clear about the inflation target at 2%. We're not there yet. They're going to continue to wait. And again, this is just more of the same rhetoric. Some of the questions that come in, because I always listen to the questions from the reporters, and some of the questions coming in are focused more on, you know, at what point do you expect that, or tell us some, what economic statistics do we need? What should we be looking at? And again, I still think they dance around that. One of the topics is looking at jobs, and we've talked about inflation being an impact. You know, one of the probably the biggest source of concern in inflation is wage pressures. So as wages go up, and I do think that's moderating, and that is one thing they mentioned that does make sense. One other thing I'd say is I would say the job market in general is coming back into equilibrium. So there was a long period, you know, during the pandemic when there was more demand for jobs than there was supply of people to fill those jobs. That is now coming into equilibrium. Interesting, I was playing pickleball with a buddy yesterday who has been with IBM for 20 years, and he was just told that he can no longer work remotely. And I've heard that probably from three different people, including a client, over the past week. So it doesn't make logic. It does not make logical sense. However, what it does say is that the job market is in better equilibrium. So in other words, they don't need to necessarily be paying experienced people more money to be working from home. On the other hand, I think what's happened is that there's been a shift in the management. And this was a really interesting observation when I was talking to my buddy yesterday, that the management that used to be in, say, the baby boomer age group have all retired. And now we have a new generation of managers and companies with a very, very different philosophy about work and a very different philosophy about how to run the business. So that trend, that is a concern that I have, because that can be a concern that can impact decisions that are made by management that have not been consistent. And some of it does have to do with the philosophical shift. And that shift, is just starting to happen. So I personally have some concern. I think there's going to be, if the way I would word it is, maybe some volatility in some of the companies, because some of the changes that are going to be made may not be the best changes. For example, getting rid of some senior level people or not allowing them to continue to work remotely, which is going to force them into retirement.
Well,
a very different scenario than we've seen we saw a few years ago.
Audrey and I are on two total opposite ends of the spectrum on that. Now, Aud still has her Series 7 and everything at PTI, so she can come in and help out if needed. But basically, she's doing her real estate stuff. And
right.
She's got her office in her house. Well, nobody else lives there except the two pooches. The idea of her driving to another office to do this stuff instead of just having an office in her place would be crazy. So she does fine with that. Okay. Now, she doesn't have five kids running around and the doorbell ringing all day, bothering the hell out of her. But for here at PTI, and you've been up here in the studio, and we have a small group, but when we manage money for people, we talk about maybe a position they have, maybe we talk to the client, they want to be protected, they don't. Whatever it is, everything is customized. So we'll talk about if somebody wants protection, we may want to buy some put protection, or they might want us to. And now we're going to, there's three, four of us here, and we're going to say, okay, what do you think about this stock? Let's check it out. I mean, I'm not Mr. Stock Guy, but if it's an index, let's look at the client's background. What strike should we pick? Should we pick like a high deductible protection for your insurance or not? The idea of me having to call somebody and drag them in from walking the dog to have that conversation, I want no part of it, Dan. If you're working here and we're doing stuff for clients, I want your ass here, basically, because I want to be able to talk to you like right across the desk. So I think a lot of it is somewhat individual. I mean,
yes.
I mean, which isn't to say that during COVID we didn't have people at home and we made it work, but God, it was awful. Now, here in the city, one of my serious pet peeves is we, the U.S. people, spent an absolute fortune in hardening this Federal Reserve building in terms of millions of dollars for security after 9/11. There's nobody there. Okay, I don't trust a government employee to tell me he's doing just as well from home. Sorry, I just don't. Plus this end of the loop could sure use 500 of those people back in that building for the restaurants and bars and everything around here. So the idea that they're going to be home forever, give me a break. I mean, I'm weird on this subject, but But that's where I am. I know from what me, I could never try and track somebody down with a side hustle every time I wanted to do a trade for a client and get somebody else's opinion on it. But what, that'd be nuts for me. Just saying.
I'm in total agreement with you. I'm just, you know, I'm making some observations on some things that are going on. And also, you know, going back to your question about you know, some of what the Fed, the gobbledygook that the Fed basically was talking about yesterday. One other number that came up that was very significant earlier this week was consumer confidence, and the fact that consumer confidence is now lower. It came in lower than expected. But the Fed, during the meeting with the Fed, they were talking about things like, you know, the pickup in consumer confidence, and that the consumer is back. So looking through the numbers of consumer confidence, clearly they're lower. You know, there's been a trend of people who were, in fact, I met with a client the other night who was talking about, you know, their retired client that was talking about how they've shifted their eating habits based on the fact that food at restaurants is still very expensive. Food at grocery stores is still expensive. So they're shifting the way they eat, and they were people that, you know, while they were working, were, you know, go out to dinner. Like a lot of people go out to dinner every night or almost every night, and they're shifting that whole, they're shifting their part of their lifestyle, if you will. So the going back to consumer confidence, there's less consumer confidence, there's more consumer debt, and we've had earnings coming out, and three companies that came out with earnings that disappointed. Think about the consumer: McDonald's disappointed, yep. Starbucks disappointed, and CVS disappointed.
And McDonald's has done nothing but raise prices, so you know the traffic has to be way down.
Yes, precisely, and that is somewhat of a dilemma. And people are at a point now where you know, we've had several years of inflation. Baby boomers are retiring; they don't have as much disposable income, and who wants to pay, you know, $20 for a cocktail at a place that used to sell it for $5, and you can make it at home, you know, before you go out to dinner. So I think there is a shift in spending habits. There's definitely a shift in consumer confidence. People are waiting for, you know, to see housing prices are starting to come down, but the service costs are still very high. There's still inflation in certain sectors of the economy that does not seem to be moderating. This is something that Powell talked about. What the sense I have, if we have to make any sense about that speech yesterday, is that they are going to continue to wait and basically be patient, but that rates will remain high. And going back to our talk that we've had for well over a year, it's still a good time to be buying T-bills. You know, still a good time to be buying bonds in general. One interesting aside about corporate bonds that where the spreads have tightened, where they become rich, where they become expensive, there are still exceptions because we do our homework on these companies. But a comment that I heard that I absolutely agree with, think about this, Chief. Companies, let's just say companies that issue corporate bonds, their balance sheets are stronger now because they're anticipating this recession, right? So for well over a year and a half, 2 years, all this talk that we're going to end up in recession, and that hasn't happened yet. The economy is slowing, but not to the extent of the fact that the U.S. economy is going to enter a recession.
Well, Dan, if you don't come to grips with what the inflation number really is, we'll never be in a recession, but we will be in a recession.
Right. And as I said several years ago, when at the beginning of the pandemic, that we actually did have two consecutive quarters of negative GDP, so we actually did have our recession already. But the news in terms of looking at companies, and especially on the corporate bond side, it is true that their balance sheets are stronger, so they can weather, you know, continued downturn. So there's been some advanced warning, if you will, and the smart companies are the ones that have already made changes to their balance sheets. They've kept their debt levels low. So those are going to be the winners in this environment.
We used to have a dude on the show, go nameless, and he would track a lot of that stuff, kind of like, and this is before COVID, you know, this is 6-7 years ago, and his research was that because of all the stock buybacks, that the top 100 companies actually had worse balance sheets than they had before. Is that, I don't know if there's as many buybacks lately, so I have a feeling you're correct now currently, that the balance sheets are better, but they're not as good as maybe they ought to be, I don't think, because of those stock buybacks. Some of these guys bought stock a lot higher than what it's...
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Kind of lost you for a second here, Dan.
And especially growth stocks and especially tech. I would agree with you on equities, and I would agree with you on growth stocks. I think with corporate bonds, companies that issue corporate bonds, it's different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hello? I agree.
Me back?
Yep.
So that I would say on the you know, companies that issue corporate bonds have been more cautious because they're looking at their debt levels. Tech companies are not as good at looking at their debt levels. They're just looking at growth. So those companies, I would agree with you that some of those balance sheets are not looking as good. So if you had to take stocks as a group, especially the ones that the heavily weight the index, like tech stocks, not as good. But if you look at corporate bonds, companies that issue corporate bonds, I'd say that in general, they have been better at strengthening their balance sheets, preparing themselves for, you know, a more significant downturn. And the reason I'm mentioning this, you know, for the listeners, is that corporate bonds still look good, even though they look expensive. There's a reason they're expensive, and it's not just because people are chasing yield. It's because the balance sheets are looking stronger, so they can, you know, that gives you more confidence that they're going to be able to meet their interest and principal payments when they come due.
Yeah, on the inflation side, well, two things. One, obviously, you know, I've been, you know, PTI is an up business, okay, but I have a feeling there's people out there that are in a position that even smaller institutions, even small university, for God's sake, they're still trading, you know, 5 years ago, 4 years ago's market, and they're not going to change. I mean, right? I would say back then when interest rates were zero, except for somebody who's really kind of unique and could find mid companies that were solid and they actually were getting some interest, most people wanted no part of fixed income at all. T-bills were useless. Everything was useless. And even people who were 80 years old, I never did it. And to be, everybody knows how honest I am with the listenership. We lost a lot of business because people who should have been, when I say should have been, everybody's unique, but people who were retired and 75, 80 years old and all of a sudden wanted me to like go all in NVIDIA, I was very reluctant to do that then. I mean, in retrospect, I probably should have for a while, but I was reluctant to do that. Just because you're being dealt a different blow, you know, a different deck from the, doesn't make somebody change their spot on the risk curve as much as, in my opinion. So, you know, we lost some business. Well, now a lot of people are still kind of out there. And actually, some have done very well, better than if you were protected, better than if you were in fixed income, right? I mean, you'll admit that. But now all of a sudden, there's been a somewhat of a tone change. How much of one, you and I can't, you know, we can't go out 5 years and tell everybody. But anybody thinks that there hasn't been a tone change with these interest rates going back up, now I think for somebody to not have some in fixed income and some protected, even if we're a little early, Dan, maybe a little early, I don't think that's right. I mean, depending on where you are. Now, if you're 25 and it's your first 500 hours in the market, yeah, you don't need Dan or me, probably. But most people aren't like that. But one technical question I wanted to ask you yesterday is, they think they're being restrictive in this policy at 5.5%. They're letting the balance sheet is draining down.
Yes.
Fairly rapidly, which they, by the way, they said they're going to stop. They're going to make it go slower. So that's probably the most bullish thing they said yesterday. But they're not really restrictive because the money supply is the same as it was last year. It's not down. It's not growing, but it's not down. So the money supply is steady, but the balance sheet's going down. Which you might say, how can you do that? Well, because the money supply, just with stocks going up and things going up and borrowings increase, money supply goes up by itself, right? It's up to them to keep it down if they want it down. So they're not fighting it down, even though their balance sheet, I know this is way too technical. My question is, he was his point 100 times yesterday, if you listen through the gobbledygook, was that we're still seeing high inflation, but we're being restrictive, and we're just, which I don't think they're that restrictive at 5.5%. We're just going to let it roll like this, and eventually we'll win. Now, my question to you, Dan, because you've been around a bit, if you take the Chiefs, maybe ridiculous, maybe spot on, conspiratorial views on what we get at this, at the consumer price index, you know, basically the incredible low keep of medical stuff and all these kinds of things in housing. Medical and housing has been ridiculously underreported in my mind. However, what I do remember from the 80s is it also on its own, Dan, it seems to be, and maybe you can tell me why, I cannot figure out, it is a lagging indicator dramatically. And I don't know why. I don't know why when you go out every month and say, what's the price of brown rice? Well, it's up 2%. Why that would be lagging, I have no idea other than 3 weeks. But somehow, it is. Now, you and I know, I think we know, that in the last 4 years, the prices across the board are up 38, 40%, especially in rents and things like that, and especially in you know, any kind of hospital stuff, drugs for sure. And yet, the CPI is owned up to right now on average probably 18 to 20% of it. Now, I think some of it, Dan, is kind of cheating, but some of it is it's going to make its way through. And I don't think Powell gets that. Maybe he didn't study the late 70s and 80s. The 40% rise in rent that they've said is 20, it's going to make its way through there. I don't think they're going to lie forever. You know, somewhere along the line, they're not going to tell you that hospitalization insurance is down when it's up. It's going to make its way through. So I'm not so sure that if we had no inflation right now, no change in prices, even though we have this price level, I'm not so sure that the CPI doesn't stay hot for a while because it's done it before. No, please critique me on that.
Well, first, I totally agree with you on the lag effect that. And it's, you know, our job and their job is at the Fed is to anticipate, you know, and what I've noticed since the beginning of this period of raising rates is that the Fed has been more reactive than proactive in the process. And part of it is because of what you're saying, Chief, that some of the economic numbers are lag, and I am not exactly sure why. It seems like a very long lag, if you will, until they finally wake up and see, for example, that consumer spending is down. It comes in as a shock, and that should not be happening if we're looking at the right numbers, right? So I think at this point we're, I absolutely agree with you that there needs to be more focus on drilling down into what's included in the CPI and what's not included, and really how it does impact, for example, the consumer. So you may not be including food, but food is a big source of, you know, that's one of your big ticket items. And as you mentioned, medical expenses, rent. One thing further that I'll say that hasn't come down are costs for services, costs for contractors, for example, if you're doing work on your home. Any type of service, if you've had to use an attorney recently or a CPA, costs for service-oriented businesses have continued to go up, have continued to be strong. I've seen business owners that the only way that they're able to keep their businesses going is to raise prices. Well, at some point, people are going to find they're going to go elsewhere. They're no longer going to pay that increase in price in order to stay, you know, continue to work with that business, to use that business. So yes, there's no question that there's this lag effect that is not really being incorporated into the discussion that the Fed has, and it's also not really being explained properly. And part of the reason, I think, I wouldn't use the word cover up, but I would say to a certain degree, there's a little bit of, they're trying to make sure that they're not too definitive And their answer is going back to the weatherman analogy that, you know, doesn't want to be wrong, so, you know, we'll cover all grounds. Yeah, there's a chance of rain, there's a chance of no rain, there's a chance of sun. And I'm kind of thinking like that's what they're doing right now. They're covering all their bases, and even within the conversation yesterday, there were contradictory statements. You know, yes, things are slowing down. Oh, the economy is growing, is going great. So, yeah, you can take any statistic, any single economic statistic, and you can mold it to your conclusion. And that is what I think you're in agreement with me on this. That is what they seem to be doing. There seems to be, rather than sort of looking at the full picture and talking more specifics and talking about this area of the economy could be challenging, or this part of the country is having to slow down, or there seems to be a lot more focus on just kind of covering all bases and not really coming up with a specific game plan and not being too conclusive about what's currently happening. But I'll agree first that there's been a more reactive than proactive, and then they're so afraid of making the wrong decision.
Well, I agree, and they also, you don't have to think back too far. You don't have to think back to 1980 because most people weren't here. You only have to think back, I'm going to say, 2 or 3 years. And the inflation was obvious to everybody, and these guys were saying that there was no chance of it. And
Right, exactly. And
the numbers bore them out. Not you and me saying, wait a minute, everything's going up. I mean,
yeah.
I think some of it was them, you know, too much in the smoked out limousine. But also they look at these numbers, and I honestly don't know why there's such a massive lag in these numbers, other than the fact that they are cheating on some of it. But I mean, I don't know how your regular stuff, these people are doing this every month. They're probably very good at it.
And with technology, we should be getting numbers sooner, right?
You would think, yeah.
Technological improvements. One word that's been thrown out, and I think it's a word that we should be paying a little more attention to, is stagflation.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, with the numbers being...
Wait a minute, Dan. Didn't we take that out of the dictionary in 1984?
I guess I have an old dictionary, because I think it's still in one that I have in my office. I guess the basic concept is that, you know, economic slowing or basically no economic growth, little or no economic growth, but inflation is still an issue. And that environment is certainly not favorable for the economy. And it's, you know, but I will say that one of the things, again, that came up yesterday is just the, you know, oh, there's no chance that's where we are. There's no chance that that's going to happen. And
it's here.
It is already here. I agree. When I first heard the discussion, I said, yeah, that's exactly where we're at. And you have to see it. You have to look beyond, I think, the numbers and into situations like I was mentioning earlier, like a couple of clients and friends who are no longer able to work remotely, people concerned about food, changing their spending habits. And then you get the number. You get the consumer confidence number coming in weaker than expected. So... I think when people are so afraid of being wrong, that and they're covering all their bases and they're being reactive rather than proactive, they're not really providing a whole lot of value. They're not really providing value to investors or to the citizens of the United States, for example.
Well, everything has worked against, I'm going to say, every man in the last 5 years. I mean it. When you look at the inflation stuff, when you talk on TV, the first thing they're going to say is gas and food. And we just did it here. We just did it here. When in fact, that's kind of right in front of you. Right? And to the extent that you can deal with it, shop the sales. Now, the whole world can't shop the sales. I get it. And, you know, gas was up, 20 cents in 2 weeks out where I get it. So last week, I actually found one place that was cheap, and I filled up, damn, you know, which I don't normally do.
Yeah.
I think what's around, and you know, I've had a couple of comments from you know, the guys that you actually met them. I said, you know, this hospitalization stuff is, you know, is, and somebody who's actually very gifted, very healthy, I don't feel it. I don't go to the doctor or something along those lines. And I go, well, that's a I didn't say that to like a really ignorant thing to say, but I mean, I said, well, you're right, it doesn't affect you, is what I was being nice. And but what you've seen, because there were hurricanes around you, I mean, everybody might think that they're sort of okay with this. They're dealing with the gas, they're dealing with the, and we've had guests on that say we've learned to deal with it. We've cut back here, we've done that, just like you explained. But nobody's ready for the hidden part. What would the guy call it? The double, he took housing out of, and food and energy and housing out, what do you call it? The double, I don't know, what was the name he used? Thank you, Greg. Supercore. I think that people who have maybe less savings than they're used to have done well on wealth. The wealth is high, stocks and houses prices. But wait till your air conditioner goes out.
Yeah.
And you get that bill and it's $9,000 and say, wait a minute, those things were $4,000. Where's the $9,000 coming from?
That's actually a really good example, and it's a story that I've heard from neighbors and friends, and it's a very good, it's very representative of what's happening. You call it, you know, maintenance costs for your home, but in particular, for some reason, it's been air conditioners. And a lot of the, you know, here's an interesting concept that a lot of the companies that manufacture, say, air conditioners or dishwashers, we had to replace our dishwasher. It was brand new, and then a year later, so they don't have the shelf life that they've done, that they've had in the past. I think the same thing about tech, you know, like cell phones. You have to get the next upgraded iPhone, and then you're going to pay another $1,500 or $2,000 because the old one doesn't have the same, isn't even going to function, right? So that trend seems to also be something that's driving profits in a lot of companies, but it's not favorable for the consumer.
Well, I have a quick story, and we got to go to break. But the speaking of dishwashers, the guys upstairs, the top floor, their dishwasher goes out, right? Of course, the thing's 20-some years old, so it doesn't surprise me. So I head over to it, and I go online, and of course, there's a Home Depot right near me. And I had a big credit there anyway, so I see all these dishwashers. So I go over there, and I said, well, that Whirlpool looks pretty nice. Oh, yeah, it's real nice, and blah, blah, blah. It's like $600. The guy says, well, you know, the only ones we have in stock, which they never led you to believe they had anything in stock, were the ones with the orange tag, which just so happened the one I'm looking at is the one with the orange tag. I go, I guess we'll take that one. That's the only one you got, right? So the guy said, well, we got to look for it. We don't know where it is. The guy spends an hour up and down. He's got some guy with a forklift checking all the... Finally, the guy goes, we can't find it. And I go, well, I need a dishwasher. The plumber's at the place. Well, you can take the one on the floor. Okay, well, we take the one on the floor. Get it home. The guy lugs it upstairs, up three flights of steps by himself. You know, I'm like, how the hell are you doing that? But anyway, gets it up there, pulls the old one out, the old one shot, and says, well, the new one, I'm the plumber, I'm not used to the electronics. I have a guy that knows how to do this stuff. I'll have him come on over, a buddy of his. Guy comes over. Now, it's already up there. It's already sitting there. It's already kind of hooked up. So the guy spends an hour and a half, two, and I'm getting ready. I'm heading out to Odds. And the guy upstairs comes down. I go, here's 400. He's been here a couple hours. That should cover it, right? One would think.
Yeah.
He calls me. I hit a text. He wants five. So what am I going to do? I give him the other 100. And because he's the air conditioning guy, too. I told him I wanted to come out and check the air conditioners before summer. Of course, it's getting to be summer. I think that won't happen.
Right.
I'm like, you know, okay. I mean, but the going rate for these guys, they all got to figure, you know, in a nice neighborhood. It's gouge, baby.
Yes.
I don't think, you know, it is a Saturday. He must have been close. Probably took him a half hour to get there and back. He's here 2 hours. I think 500 is a little excessive. But, you know, what am I going to do? I mean, I didn't ask him beforehand. But, I mean, I think the sticker shock is really there in any kind of a auto body repair. By the way, we come back, I have a question for you, and let's assume you... We'll do this to Greg. I love doing stuff to Greg. We'll make Greg the CPI guy, and I will quiz you about a new car that just came out, and you tell me where it is in the CPI. S&P futures up 34, NASDAQ futures up 153. Right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Welcome back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures up 33. NASDAQ Futures up 152. So we're making back all the stuff that we lost after we went up and then went flying down on a close. We had a big gain in the market, then we had a big loss, and now we're kind of right back maybe to the middle above. So it's the last hour has been very, very volatile. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 19.1%, the FTSE up 34.4%, CAC around down 51.6%. So mixed and not much going on over there. Asia, Nikkei down 37, call that flat. Hang Seng, they are back trading today, up 444. That's 2.5%, 18,207, so they liked whatever the Fed did. Shanghai is still close, so we can't do anything about those guys. Yesterday, the futures were down more than this. We're making a lot of that back. But Dow is up 87, S&P's down 17, NASDAQ down 52 on the cash at the end of the day. Bonds up 3 basis points, 4.61. The Bund down 3 basis points, 2.55. Japan unchanged at 0.90. Oil up 64 cents, but still under 80. 79.64 was 84 a week ago, Greg, something like that. It was mid-80s. Brent up 75 cents, 84.19. Natural gas up 5 cents, 198. RBOB up a penny, 259. Gold up about a buck 20 to 23.12 again. The gold was way up after the Fed came out with their announcement, and it sunk right after that, too. It went down with the rest of the market. I'm not sure why. Silver down 20 cents, 26.54. Copper down 5 cents, 4.49. We've got foreign exchange, the euro at 107, right about where it's been, and the pound at 125, right about where it's been. Still a little weaker than a couple of weeks ago. Dollar's been a little stronger. Crypto up 1,200, finally. 58,731. Taking a bath every day, but not today. Greg, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, everyone. 7:37 here in Chicago. 54 degrees and cloudy. Thunderstorms today in the afternoon with some high winds. High of 77 here. Phoenix, 69 degrees, warm, plenty of sun. High of 92 today. Traffic getting worse. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 42 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook, 68 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf is 55 minutes. The Ryan from 95th is 31 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 44 minutes. Sports, MLB, White Sox lose at home. That was against the Twins, 10-5. Diamondbacks lose at home to the Dodgers. That was 8-0. Cubs win. The Cubs win at Mets, 1-0. And then we had the NHL West playoffs, and the Stars win at Golden Knights, 3-2. And Oilers win at home, 4-3. That's all I got, Chief.
How pissed are the Twins going to be if they don't get to play the Sox for a while?
Well, they're much better. So
they've beat them eight times, right? Yeah. Always on them this year or something.
They've God already padded sick. Their stats enough. So
really, yeah. All right. So you guys, you learned mavens, Greg on the futures side, and Dan everywhere else. Let's put you two guys as the CPI guy. I remember I'm going to describe myself when I go through online. I mean, Greg is really good at this. I'm sure you are. I'm about the biggest stumble bum when it comes to running into stuff that I really love, and then I can't go back and find it. One day, Dan and Greg, I was bumping my way through the Fed statistics on the CPI.
Said bumping?
Bumping away through, and somehow I landed on this most fascinating thing, and now I can't find it to save my life. It had to do with all the adjustments regarding the Ford F-150. You know, for most people, it's the most, you know, most bought vehicle in the last 20 years. And I started like it, you know, 2000 maybe, or 2005. And every year, for those of you that don't know, if you can't just take the 2005 F-150 and then the 2006 F-150 is $500 more, and it, you know, and the thing's 10 grand, you can't just say, ah, it's up 5%. I mean, because there are things now that are included that may not have been included before. So every year they'd have this list. And one year it was, you know, well, now the back license something, you know, the tail light went on the top of the truck, the dole thing. Or one year, all of a sudden, air conditioning became standard where you had to get it separate before. And at the, I followed it for like 10 years. And according to the CPI, the price of the pickup hadn't gone up at all, even though it was up over the 10 years, probably 20%. Or, you know, but in their mind, because you kept getting more and more of the stuff, you were even. Okay, so this is not an easy job. I mean, you can't say that all of last year it cost you $500 for the air conditioning and this year it's standard, that you can't include it in the price because you are getting more. But also at some point, you're still getting a pickup truck, for God's sake. And by the way, if you live in northern Idaho, you don't need the damn air conditioning and don't want it. So, but I looked at my brother was telling me when I'm, you know, was looking around for a truck, he says, these new Ford Broncos, they're kind of neat. And by the way, they're supposed to be like 25 grand. And I go on the Ford site, and first of all, they're not 24 grand. The lowest one is 38. But there are six models of the Ford Bronco. You know, the high-end trick one where the air intake is up, so if you went through a stream, you would die. I mean, who the hell's could drive through a stream? I don't know. But guess how much the price go from on the six models, starting at 38. Don't speak at once. No. Both speak at once here with this answer.
I'm guessing 30%.
Dan?
I would go higher.
Yeah. The top model is 90.
Wow.
Like,
you should see the tires and the this and that and all kinds of.
So I was off by 10?
Well, no, 90,000.
10 times?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, they've got like a. Crazy. They got one, sure. Like, for the next model up's like 45 or 50, then there's a 60, a 70, and there's a 90. You should see the tires, the gizmos this thing has. But it's the same truck.
I mean, the devious part of me kind of wants to order like 20 of them, and when they can't produce them, and then sue them for the entire amount.
God. I bet they produce the high-end ones.
Yeah, they'll produce the high-end ones, but there's probably like 10 nationally that go out of the low-end.
Oh, yeah, the low-end. I can't even imagine trying to buy a basic pickup truck now. I mean, maybe you can do it in Iowa or someplace, but...
We found what you were talking about, by the way. They're called hedonic quality adjustments.
How did you find that so quick?
We're good.
He is good. Dan, would you have been that fast?
Possibly.
All right. So I am the dunder. I'll admit it. I mean, you know, I'm good at some stuff. That's not what I'm the best at. But anyway, these adjustments, I think it's really hard to work for the CPI. You know, to do it right.
To do nothing and get paid for it.
Well, I mean, if you're doing that job. I mean, somebody is actually going out and surveying.
I'm really good at making stuff up.
What?
Yeah, I think so. Or their sample size may be really low, or it might be really concentrated.
In fact, I just make up all of the traffic and weather.
Well, you know, was George Carlin, hippy dippy weatherman?
Exactly.
Yeah.
what was his forecast? Increasing lightness toward dawn and darkness toward night or something. that was a good one. You couldn't go wrong with that. So, Dan, you've got clients. Nobody seems to want to embrace the little changes we're seeing. And it seems like whenever the market goes down, it does come right back up. They're not all wrong, but the risk here is, seemingly the risk is growing. Now, I think you sort of agree with me, but can we quantify that other than just a feeling?
You know, it's interesting because one thought that I wanted to bring up today, this morning, is we're in May now, right?
Yep.
So sell in May and go away. And, you know, looking at some of the seasonal risk, if you will, in terms of how the markets perform in the summer, people have made money in the first part of this year, the first four months of this year. So my advice pretty much to everybody is trim. This is a good time to take a little off the top, especially if you've been in some tech names. You were talking about the client that had a large position in NVIDIA. I have a friend that has a large amount in a tech stock, and you know, my advice is take 10% off the table. Like, this is the time to do that. And the risks that are in front of us are very, high. I mean, the risks that we're seeing beyond...
Sounds like you're just soft there, Dan. Sorry.
Greg says you're just soft.
I'm trying to cover all grounds, right? Trying to cover all grounds.
You're not a believer. You're not... You're like...
You see, this is how it works. If you've got more money in your account, that means you have more money to buy.
Yeah.
So you should actually go on margin and get longer.
Yeah.
I agree, but I think our goal is to realize those gains and capture those gains and preserve some of those gains. So that's, I guess, the concept of trimming as we enter this period in the summer. I think it's just sort of holding on to some of those gains so that if when we do see a sell-off and we do see some news that's unexpected that's going to drive the market down, we see fewer buyers in the market. You at least want to hold on to some of what you made in the
Dan, you realize it's not what you make, it's what you keep. That kind of mentality, how ancient that makes you.
Yeah. But I still think it applies, right, to today. It still applies. I've heard stories very recently. I had a new prospective client call yesterday who's done very, very well in his business, and he's just retired, and his concerns are that he had put money in the market and, you know, he needed somebody who knew more about what they were doing because he had lost a lot of money. And a friend, another woman who's a client, her husband is kind of tries to do one on his own, and he's, you know, he's lost money as well. And I think the strategies that we have, I really believe we're in like a very good time, continue to be in a good time. I don't think it's the time to be taking additional risk. And if you want to take a small part of your portfolio and do that, there are too many concerns, too many risks going forward with the uncertainty. And if anything, you know, the Fed meeting yesterday just doesn't give a lot of confidence to anybody.
No.
The confidence we have is that they're not going to do anything in the near term. So we know that. But there's not a whole lot of information that allows people to make, you know, decisions, whether they be investment decisions or purchases, say, of a new home or a vacation home or a trip. So it's not going to help spending, you know, and the consumer confidence numbers coming down, not looking good. So even though there is, quote, strength in the economy, it's changing. You know, we're in that period. It's changing slowly, which I think is good, but got to protect yourself right now.
Dan, how do you go against, and you know, you and I, we're not going against anything. We're preaching very standard investment strategy.
Yes.
That, I mean, we're not. I don't think we're pushing against the salmon running up the river. I mean, I hope we're not. Plus, I still think that if the dollar is going to continue to degrade, you do need to be long the market some regards, because it's been going straight up as they've been doing that. So it's not like, you know, people think that, God, if I give Chief and Dan my money, they're going to sell all my stocks. I mean, no, I'm not. I mean, we're going to find a way to be maybe a little less long and a little more protected just in case. We're not throwing the U.S. economy under the bus. I mean, I don't think I'm doing that for sure. But all my people are long.
No, not at all.
And you do wonder the mentality is, and I have an article or somewhere I'll find since I'm cleaning a little bit. The whole idea with the COVID, now granted we went down before, you know, when everybody was afraid, but basically once they started pouring money into the system, we had a 3-year, for lack of a better term, stone cold depression. If you looked at anything, everybody was shut down. How could it not have been? Nobody was working.
Right.
And yet the market went up every day, damn near. And somebody wrote this article, and he said, based on what the behavior of the Fed and the government is now, and the idea that the wealth is carrying us, not necessarily income, but wealth, said, if we go into recession, don't be foolish enough to sell. You want to buy, because the Fed is going to countermand it with money. Until the inflation gets so bad that even they have to admit they're doing the wrong thing. And by the way, we're still not really there yet. It's not like they're shoved rates to 8 or 9 or 10%. They're at 5, 5.5%, which in the 10-year, anybody who says the 10-year is restricted at 4.7, I think you're out of your mind. It's not restrictive there, I don't think. I mean, if it was 15...
I don't think so either. That has been a lot of the talk lately.
Yeah, but...
And yesterday.
It depends on...
But I don't agree with it either.
Yeah, I mean, but I think that just to be aware of yourself to take... But then I understand how hard it is if you have... You know, there was a time before indexes that if you and I were doing somebody's portfolio and somebody gave us $1 million and wanted to buy... I want 20 stocks. I want to diversify. It's okay. That's $50,000 a stock. we might find at the end of the year 10 of them are worth 52, you know, 8 of them are worth 45, and 2 of them are worth 100, okay? And our advice is going to be, well, if you want to be the same way, diversified the next year, maybe we need to sell some of the winners and buy a little more of the losers. Well, that goes over like a stink bomb in church. Wait a minute. You idiots want to sell my winners and buy the losers. Well, yeah, but we can't trade last year. We got to trade next year. And now, do we really want to be $100,000 in a stock just because it was a winner last year? I mean, it's counterintuitive. Did you ever see the movie where there's a big scene at the crap table, and all these guys are betting the pass line, and who's ever rolling the dice? I mean, some lady, and she's kicking ass, right? All of a sudden, some young girl walks up and puts like $2 on the don't pass line, which is betting for the house. No, the whole place just looked at her and goes, "What are you doing?" Like she introduced some negative karma into the evening.
Yes.
Sure enough, the next roll was a 7, and the guy comes out with like a snow shovel and pulls everybody's chips over to his side of the table. I mean, it's almost like people don't want to. They have a karma if they think for a second. But you can't do that. It's just going to sound really harsh, Dan. You're different because you talk to people in a mid-sized game, and you like these guys. I'm not saying I don't know these people personally, but you have to assume that they care as much about you as you care about the stock. The stock is an investment. It's all it is to you. You know, if you were at Pullman and you worked there for 20 years and you had Pullman stock, well, then it's more than an investment. But by and large, these stocks are not part of you. They're just an investment. You buy them and you sell them.
Absolutely, you have to stay. You have to keep that distance, or you have to keep that perspective is the word that I would use, because you can't marry a stock or a concept. You know, people are, you know, that kind of tails in with what I've been thinking about here is you were talking about risk, and you were talking about, and again, trying to let listeners know. And sometimes it's a real struggle when somebody falls in love with a particular stock, or you know, a tech stock, or yeah, AI is going to the moon, so I'm going to put money in this particular stock. And you're saying, yeah, AI is a good concept, but really, do your research on these companies and spread out your risk amongst a number of them before you make that decision. There's for some reason, you know, it's that greed, fear spectrum, and for some reason, people still like the excitement of, going back to your analogy, of going to the casino, you know, of rolling the dice on some of their names. And that does go counter to what we do, because we do our homework, we talk to management, we want to be able to sleep well at night, we want to provide consistent returns, we want to provide absolute or positive returns. So our business is not one of going to the casino. It's not one of rolling the dice. It's not one of, you know, I've heard some people say, yeah, you get paid to, you know, to it's legalized gambling. It's not. Our job is to protect, to manage risk. There's a huge difference. And while it's okay if somebody takes a little bit of their money as they approach retirement or into retirement and they have fun playing around with stocks, make sure that the majority of your money is safe, and that it's the capital is preserved, and that it's growing still. So people come up with these ideas, and I don't know if you agree with me on this, Chief, but because of the world, you know, the internet and the availability of information, and everybody has an opinion. I mean, 20 years ago, that wasn't the story. 20 years ago, people were relying on professionals who had access to all the information, and this is what we do for a living. This is what we do all
people,
day long.
People think they have access to all the information, and people
they do.
And people have been here forever, like you and me, realize we don't.
Yeah, exactly, right. There's a significant difference, and there's also you can fall in love with a particular YouTube video or somebody that you thought, wow, this guy's really smart, but you got to be really careful. You got to do your research on that person who's speaking. You got to watch their track record. But more importantly, you should really be thinking about having a little bit of faith in the system and those people who are professionals. I mean, some people may actually try to become their own lawyer if they need to hire a lawyer, but in most cases, you're going to hire a professional to do that. And you need at least to hear the advice that we give it isn't a do-it-yourself field. You know, it's definitely not a do-it-yourself. And the people who try to do that generally over time do not do well. They might say, yeah, I made money on this one stock or when the market's going up and everybody else is making money. But you have to really look at what your goals are. You have to look at what your objectives are, especially as you're approaching and into retirement. You got to have, we got to look at worst case scenario if we continue to see inflation. And these ideas that come up, and I get these questions all the time about Bitcoin and AI and you know, it just, for one, it's just not our thing. But I think more importantly, you just have to keep that as a small portion of your portfolio.
Well, it is.
If you want to try to learn the markets, you know, get a personal account and put a few of those stocks in there and see how easy it is.
Well, what is it?
Or how difficult it is.
I'd pull Bitcoin out of that mix, but AI, like the cloud, like China investments, it is part of our gig. We're just not going to go crazed about it.
Exactly.
But definitely the stocks we invest in, we're hoping that if you know, there's AI stuff out there, that they're part of it. It's not like we don't like the word. I mean, we challenge the fact that it's a new phenomenon. It's more of been a process for as long as you and I have been around. It's just like the cloud. Well, what's the cloud? Well, the cloud is having people available to bring for you to off. Or to have your computer system,
more storage,
you know, deal with stuff in peak loads and not have to get all the equipment yourself. It was a huge innovation, but it became a commodity.
Yeah, but I think the point I'm trying to make is that certain companies are going to excel in AI, and that the homework that we do on these companies is what helps us determine where to put our money. You just can't put it across the board or with, you know, some advertisement about a company, you know, when they're trying to tout their AI capabilities, because that's going to suddenly be a lot of companies, and it may even be, you know, companies that you wouldn't expect, and you know, in the food industry. And I'm kind of hearing everybody taking that on. It's really a question of doing your homework and understanding it.
So you're not going to be hornswoggled by somebody who's in the paving business and has 10 miles of interstate. All he does is talk about AI. You're going to say, wait, what?
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what's happening.
Yeah,
that's absolutely what's happening. So one other concept that got brought up this week, and it kind of goes along with where you want to take your risk and how much risk there is just look at what's happening internationally and globally. Look at, you know, we're in a certain situation here in the United States that's quite different than Europe, quite different than Asia. And looking at, you know, again, the concept of when do you step into the international markets? When do you go overseas? I still believe that we still have the best investment opportunities here. I'm not saying this forever and ever and not saying that it's always been like this in the past, but current day we do. And some countries are already cutting rates. Some economies are seeing more of a slowdown than we are. We're still stronger, I think, in terms of our economy, and I also think we're, as much as we're being somewhat critical of what's going on with the Fed, I do think we're in better shape than many countries overseas, and I do think the geopolitical risks are heightened right now, which makes it difficult to really take a large position of your money and put it into China, for example, or Russia.
Well, Dan, we got a dash, but I'm going to sneak over 1 minute, or Greg will be pissed at me. I'm going to ask you one question. By the way, we'll talk about this next week, because it's a bigger one than 1 minute. I've heard people now talking about worldwide debt, which you and I talked about, consumer debt and all the stuff going on here seemingly blowing up on its own. I've heard a couple people talking about worldwide debt, and they got so many trillions there, I can't even conceive of the number. What is that? There's nothing you and I can do about that. But what's the end of the road for that? Where's the cliff? Is there a cliff, or do people just put out more money and make it worse? I mean, I've never even seen anything like that. I've never read about it. I mean, what's the end phase there?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting concept, and certainly one that we need to be paying attention to, because it seems like things are contained here relative to the rest of the world. But it's the level of debt around the globe, and that level has increased. And I think ex-US, that level has increased quite rapidly, and maybe in many cases more rapidly. So it if every country in every place is got, you know, large deficits and growing debt levels for those particular nations and those particular regions around the world, it's not good. And I think that the focus on looking at global debt, you know, and the increases that we're seeing in global debt is really important.
Well, Dan, what do you say we
as a whole?
What do we say we ask our fine fellow Greg to write a little note and put there next Thursday? Maybe you and I do a little research on this. So instead of just quoting other people, we'll do some of that. It'll be an interesting topic. Thank you, Greg. SP Futures up 34. Up NASDAQ Futures up 139. Dan, take care of yourself. Don't get too. You guys, how hot are you guys getting? Is it getting pretty brutal, or not yet?
Yes. One this time of year, one day hot, one day a little cooler. That sort of thing. But we're getting into the hot season.
All right, bud. Well, do the best you can with that. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
All right.
Bye. Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.